You're listening to Bison Report Radio.
It's going to be interesting to see how Richmond wants to play this in terms of what he does. He does want to go out and try to get some immediate help there.
The man, the myth, the legend, Greg Menard, rushing the passer from his right-end position as a senior, and I think a legitimate National Defensive Player of the Year candidate.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio from Scout.com. Here's your hosts, Ryan Burns and Ross Uglum.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Bison Report Radio podcast. This is a UND Victory Monday edition of the Bison Report Radio podcast. I am your host, the publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum. Trevor Gebhardt's going to join me in just a little bit, our lead football analyst over at the Bison Report. But right now, what I need to do is dive right into the news. Came out from the Missouri Valley Football Conference today that Zach Johnson, now right guard Zach Johnson, was named the Valley Football Offensive Lineman of the Week. Zero quarterback pressures allowed and 12 knockdowns. Not sure who is doing the grading, but he graded out at 98% success rate, which is, you know, it's as close to being perfect as you can be. And NDSU ran for 266 yards, averaged over 5.3 a clip, and converted 9 of 14 third downs, possessing the ball for more than 35 minutes. You're going to end up with an offensive lineman of the week. It just depends on, you know, who it's going to be. We finally got some injury updates. I was able to attend the Monday press conference, and Jasir Cox, it has a lower body injury that was as specific as Coach Entz wanted to be, but then did certainly let us know that Jasir was a few weeks away, which again is probably fine considering the non-conference schedule is starting to look easier and easier, which is something that I'll touch on with Trevor in just a second. James Hendricks is dealing with a concussion or a potential concussion. Nobody really said, you know, whether or not that was diagnosed. That is known to be the reason that he was pulled from the game, was a precaution for a concussion, and was held out by the doctors. But Entz made it sound like he was going to play on Saturday and, you know, may not have suffered anything at all. So we'll find out what's going on with Hendricks. Tutsi and especially Dawson Weber played very well in his absence. Mason Hofstad did not end up so lucky. Mason was a backup Will linebacker and was a top special teamer, a sophomore, a former walk-on kid that had worked his way up the ranks, but he was on crutches on the sideline with the ice pack on the back of the knee, and that's never a good sign. Coach Ant said he was going to end up having surgery. I would anticipate that his season is lost. I don't know that for sure. Just doing some very mediocre detective work, though. Anytime the ice pack's on the back of the knee, Trevor will tell you that's not a great deal. Demetri Williams is going to be fine. Coach said they might have mismanaged his ailment a little bit, whichever that is. Coach Ants is a little bit more vague than Coach Kleiman on injuries, which is fine. But it just leaves a little bit more, like I said, detective work for us to do. Demetri was effective early in the game, but might need to be on a little bit of a reduced snap count moving forward. That, of course, not the end of the world. A little bit of recruiting news. Basketball gets a walk-on from Grayson Heyman. Grayson is the point guard for Fargo Davies, who I believe won the EDC last year and then lost the state championship game to NDSU commit Bowden Scumberg and the Jamestown Blue Jays. I'm pretty sure that's how Class A North Dakota went in hoops last year. So Grayson will be a 2020 addition to the Bison, but we at Bison Report believe that Grayson is a walk-on candidate. Last walk-on was, of course, Jared Samuelson, and he's going to be a two-year starter, so that worked out awesome. And then we need to do a little patting of ourselves on the back. I broke last week that South Dakota State Jabari Gibbs, the quarterback for South Dakota State, Jabari Gibbs, injured his throwing hand in the fourth quarter against Minnesota and would miss some time. Lo and behold, he did not play against Long Island University. So Jabari Gibbs, one source told me 4 to 5 weeks. Another source told me it wasn't going to be that serious. I don't anticipate seeing him for the rest of South Dakota State's non-conference schedule, though, as it is a bit of a cakewalk. So we'll bring on Trevor now. Trev, how's it going, buddy?
It's going good out here, man. Good to be back as always.
So did you? You said you were kind of running around during the UND game. What was that all about?
Had a lot of errands to run. Got put to work by my family, so to speak. Was doing some garage work, and some of our errands ran a little long. We couldn't find what we needed for supply, so I had to make a couple more pit stops than we wanted. But caught majority of the game after that, but didn't see a few of the things at the beginning. But did get a chance to catch your on-film review, like we dissected for probably way too long for just one play. But that was fun. So, yeah, I didn't get to see all the game, but did get the nuts and bolts of everything that entailed.
Absolutely, yeah. If they'd let us, we could probably do about a four-hour TV show that nobody would watch. It'd be absolutely great. I think, you know, topic number one, the A topic, if you will, it's hard for it not to be Trey Lance. It's just difficult. You get a kid now in his second game. You know, historically, the school's number one rival. I think that, you know, most folks would tell you that UND is not the biggest rival right now. It's South Dakota State, and then it's probably Northern Iowa after that. But it's still Bison Sioux or Bison Fighting Hawks. I mean, it's a big deal. And the kid goes 11 for 15 for 162 yards, so he's still well over 10 yards an attempt, two touchdowns, doesn't turn the ball over again. And then, you know, no big deal. I'm also going to run the ball for 6 yards a carry. I'm going to run it 16 times, and I'm gonna score with my feet two times. This kid seems to be legit, unless I'm missing something. I mean, you and I thought that the throw to Mathis could have been a touchdown. It might have even picked the wrong receiver on the play. But other than that, I mean, you start having problems with Trey Lance, you're nitpicking. And, I mean, that's kind of what we were doing when we were going through that play. But the kid has it, and it's the it that I'm talking about is something that coaches, you know, get fired for not being able to find, frankly. Guys spend how many years trying to find that QB that's going to take the program to the promised land, and somehow NDSU's identified what appears to be four of them in a row now.
Right. Which is rare in of itself. I don't care where you're at. I mean, you look at the guys that have came through, I mean, even Alabama, how many of them are sustaining professional careers beyond their collegiate days? I know now, you know, in North Dakota State, we have an offense that's more indicative of a pro-style offense. So if you get the right guy, he's going to be more prepared and have had more experience of running those type of offenses. So that does help because you can recruit to kids and say, okay, you got more of a pro prospect and more of a pro practice every day, so to speak. And what's to me is unique about it is they're all not the same style of player. They have very similar characteristics. I see qualities in each of them that are very similar. But this Trey Lance kid is at a maturity level that is well beyond the rest of them that I saw. I mean, that's not to knock all of them because they're all good friends of mine. But like you said, he's got an it factor that's just unique. And this kid makes it look easy. And he's played two games. And from my eye, which is very analytical, I am being nitpicky to try to find something to make the kid improve on. And those are not the same conversations you are having with 16, 11, and 12, simply put. So where this kid can go, I think the sky's the limit, truthfully. it's just, it's right now, it's just fun to watch, and it's only been two Saturdays.
Yeah, it's only been two Saturdays, and, you know, that's something that Matt Entz said in the press conference. He's, I think it was Kolpak said something along the lines of, is Trey not identifying things that Carson or Easton would have identified? And Coach Entz was like, well, you're talking about junior and senior Carson and second game into his career, Trey. I'm not sure we're comparing apples to apples here. And that's what I think people, you know, don't understand is, yeah, Carson's awesome. Kid might win the MVP of the NFL this year. One of the greatest stories in the history of sports in North Dakota. He also didn't play until he was a junior and a fourth-year junior at that. This kid gets in two games last year, you know, scrambles for a touchdown, picks up a fumble and runs it in, and now he's toying with FCS defense that we, or I certainly think, is probably about average or maybe even a little bit above average in UND.
So, I mean, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but, I mean, to me it's there's like an electric factor, and that's the thing with Trey is he has a big play. I don't know if the right word I'm looking for, but a big play can happen every time he touches the football. Clearly he's a quarterback, so he's going to do that every play, but I mean, he can throw it and run it. Not to say Carson couldn't run it. I mean, the kid is very athletic and would lower the boom on people. And I'm referring to the time he ran over the dude at Youngstown State at the goal line at home. But, Trey Lance has more of a, Lamar Jackson feel. He's not as fast. Don't get me wrong, but he just has that electricity factor that those other guys didn't have. And in college, when you have that type of excitement, I think it gets amplified. That's not to take away the actual ability he has, but when you have that playmaking ability in your arsenal with your arms and your legs, and you're that athletic, I think it just kind of adds to your resume and your, I don't know, legendary status. Is that possible after two games?
But, yeah, I mean, it's something that might happen. You know, it's insane to throw that word around after two games, but seriously, that's where we're at, you know, is what adds to the legend of Trey Lance? Is he, you know, faster than a speeding bullet? Can he throw it a country mile? This kid is, like you said, electric. I want to ask you one quick question because there's another local columnist that wrote something about Lance playing too far into the game and the risk of getting him hurt. And I've got a lot of other questions on social, whether it be we post something in a Facebook group or just by Twitter. People asking if Lance is taking too many hits or they're calling too many designed quarterback runs for him. One, I want to ask you, does it feel like it's any different from how the offense ran with Brock or Easton? I know Carson was, you know, they didn't throw it as much didn't run it as much because he was such a good passer and he was kind of a longer, skinnier kid. And B, do you feel like these are legitimate concerns?
I can see where the concerns would be raised, but right now when you got non-conference play, let the kid play football and let your playmakers be playmakers. I think getting his skill set on tape is very important because you got to make sure that when you're playing high-quality non-conference opponents and you're getting to the grind of the Valley, they need to prepare for that. They don't need to go – I mean, because I've seen South Dakota State do this. They did it with Taryn Christian. They didn't run him as much. And then when it came NDSU time, he ran all over the place and they ended up winning the game. So kudos to them for planning that far in advance. But I don't think you do that personally. If I was coaching, I wouldn't, because you did everything to prepare for that one game. And now what? Okay, well now the kid has not been practicing that all year. And then you get in a situation late in the season, when everything's on the line and that kid hasn't been able to utilize his full skill set. So is he going to be at his best? I don't know. You're leaving it up for chance, in my opinion. So for me, utilize your talent and ability, but control it. So there's a fine balance, because once it's out there and you know he's capable of it and it's shown on tape to where you're at the point where you know teams have to prepare for it, then I think you start dialing it down. Because when I look at his stat line, I feel like 16 carries is too much. Now, not all those are designed by any means, but when you're throwing the ball 15 times and carrying it 16, despite the way the flow of the game went, so, you know, that doesn't tell us the whole story, but I never like to see a quarterback, regardless of their ability level, running the ball more than they're throwing it. There's always going to be exceptions. There might be a certain game where that's what's working and you got to ride the hot hand. And, you know, in this case, it's number five. So if it's number five, it needs to run the ball more for you to get the W, and that's what that certain Saturday called for, then by all means, go win. But if you don't have to, don't do it. But to say that you just completely nix it from the game plan, I don't agree with that either. So long-winded answer for me to say, just balance it out.
I want to ask something. So I don't know if you've had a chance to see it, and if you didn't, that's fine. But Dylan Radins gave me the best, most concise answer in a press conference that I've ever gotten. And I started in 2015, which means I never got to ask you a question in a press conference. So I was going to say,
come on now, give me some props.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe, you know, maybe if I'd asked you something like this, you would have given a similar answer, but I asked him, and the reason this ties in is because it might be why they did have to go to the Lance run. And I asked Dylan and said, why did your core concepts not maybe go for as many yards per carry as you were hoping? And what he told me was that the defense was doing some stems, was also stunting, but basically that they would allow, and you can see this, I think it was Cofield that was the back. I can't be 100% sure, but I think it was. I broke down one play exactly what he said, which is that they're looping the three technique around, and they were allowing NDSU to get a push vertically, but they were bringing three or four defenders off the edge so that the puller and the kickout guy had too many guys to try and block. And so the offensive linemen were blocking basically nobody as these guys came around the edge and stopped power for a yard or a yard and a half. And I don't know if you noticed that, if you could kind of explain to folks what Dylan meant by that better than I just did. And then is that maybe why you saw 16 Trey Lance carries?
That very well could be it. I mean, I need to go back and look at a breakdown by quarter to get a better feel for, okay, how many carries did Trey have in the first half? And then how many do you have in the second half? Because I would venture to guess based off what Dylan's saying. I mean, I didn't see it specifically, but, if I'm reading it right, I would venture to guess that seesaw of first half, second half runs is very much swayed to the second half. So some of the feedback coming back on the sideline would basically be saying, hey, we can't run power to be successful as we want to be because of what UND prepared for. UND comes in and says, you will not beat us with your bread and butter. Okay, fair. Good job. We're going to adjust to where we know we have other strengths, and we're going to change it up on you, and you're not going to be able to stop it. So, you know, I need to go back and look to find out what that disparity is like and find out how many are actually called versus not called. But I would venture to guess you'll see a turning point, whether it's either at halftime or after a drive where power was stuffed once or two times, where it was seen kind of unusual for NDSU not to get a, you know, 3 to 4 yard and a cloud of dust run.
I want to ask you about this group of young pass catchers. Last year, you're in a situation where I think Darius Shepherd, you know, might have had 30 or 40% of the overall receiving production, period. Just an absurd amount of what they were trying to accomplish basically went to Darius Shepherd. This is just, I think, a statistical anomaly, but it's what happened. 11 completions for Trey on 15 attempts to 9 different receivers. No single receiver had more than 41 yards. No single receiver had more than 2 catches. What does that say about the depth of this group, and how much more difficult is it to prepare for a team like this? Because obviously it's not easy to prepare for Darius Shepherd, because nobody figured it out for 16 weeks, and now he plays for the Packers. But it has to be a little bit tougher when you're bringing in new personnel every play and everyone's a threat.
So I wouldn't necessarily say the personnel as far as what their strengths are, unless you got nine different guys that are all the best at one different thing. Well, at a certain point, you can only be good at so many different aspects of a position. So to give you a reference point, to go back to back in my day, you had Ryan, Zach, and myself. We even had Nate in there, Moody. And Ryan was very shifty. He was very quick and very fast, and he could find his way open out of anything. And so he would play a slot. And Zach, he could catch the ball over anybody, and he had some of the best hands I've ever seen. Myself, I could move all over the place. I knew how to play every position. I could go vertical if I needed to. I could get slippery in space, basically be very versatile. So for us, it was difficult to prepare for because we had three guys that were very good at three different aspects of the game. This group, they're too young for me to get a really good pulse on, okay, this guy's great at this, so on and so forth. But the fact that you have nine guys that are capable of making plays is where the concern comes in, because you're going to have fresh bodies every single play. And you and I were kind of discussing that a little bit beforehand, not even in relation into this, but when you have fresh legs coming at you every single snap, and you have no idea if it's a run or a pass, and the force off the ball and the line of scrimmage is at 1,000%, that's intimidating. And when we had three guys that could do it, it was very effective, and we had a very efficient pass game. Nine guys, that's a very good sign, because you're not gonna run out of fresh legs. So, very encouraging. I feel like during conference play that'll shrink down a little bit, because during non-conference you try to get as many guys involved as you can. But just seeing that is very encouraging from a very young group. So as far as my preseason deal, I'm challenging that group to step up. I feel like they've answered that bell today. So
halftime, more specifically, a minute and 33 seconds before the half, NDSU's up, I think, 21-7. They field a punt. You got a minute 33 left in all three timeouts. You got a young quarterback who's never run the two-minute drill before. They run power three times and head into the locker room. How frustrating is that as a player? And what do you think about what Coach said to me, which was, I asked him at the post-game press conference, you know, the whole – and the crowd was on him. The crowd was on him, and the crowd continues to be on him. What I mean that is – and I guarantee you he could care less, but the Bison internet community, who we love, of course, we would have, you know, we wouldn't have this thing that we're doing wouldn't exist without the Bison internet community, but they always find something to kind of pick on. And that's it for this week, was heading into the locker room, you know, with a minute 33 and three timeouts. And he said they wanted to make adjustments offensively, and they wanted to make adjustments defensively, and they thought that a two-touchdown lead was, you know, sufficient to go into half and make adjustments. But how difficult is for a competitor, an offensive competitor like yourself? Would you have struggled with that?
After the game, yes. At the time, probably not. I honestly couldn't give you a correct answer of what Coach Ence's thought process would have been going through that, but I mean, I'm sure he has his rhyme or reason, and it's his first time going through this, and everything for him is a learning process too. I don't think he would just choose to do it just on a whim, or just because he felt like he wanted to get in the locker room and talk about stuff that was on his mind. But going into a locker room, you're so ingrained in the moment. It's like a coach makes a decision, you just roll with it and you figure it out. and everything's happening so fast, you honestly don't even have time to think about it. But when you come back and you watch the game and you kind of review it in your head and you start talking about it with people and then you watch the tape the next day, yeah, then it might come up. You know, if the result is a win, you're never really going to kind of dwell on it. But, I mean, as far as making it more than it needs to be, I don't think it's that necessary. If it was a closer game at that point, I mean, it's still only a 2-touchdown lead, so it's not massive. But I feel like if this was conference play or, you know, maybe this week against Delaware, UC Davis, what have you, playoffs, obviously, I think you're getting a little more aggressive, though. So I think the Bison internet community is probably valid in their thoughts and feelings, because you want more points and you want to see your guys get the biggest win possible. So luckily for the FCS, we're not graded on margin of victory and everything still turned out okay.
Yeah, you're either in the playoffs or you're not, obviously. So most of the time, the running up the score doesn't really help. These tight ends, man, I'm so excited. The different things that they, and you know, Coach Entz was giving Tyler Roll a little bit of a jab, and that it's no wonder that Tyler's position group is getting all the love. But I look at a young, unproven wide receiver group, and I think they're doing well. In fact, I think that they are exceeding my expectations as far as the plays that they're making, their ability to get open. Phoenix, I think, you know, the numbers might not show it, but like that play we saw, he had a touchdown. He smoked his guy. I think that kid's playing football at a high level. And if they get in a situation where it's a little bit more of a shootout, you won't see one catch for 3 yards. I don't think you'll see that. But these tight ends are so special in that you have two absolute monsters in Gindorf and Ellefson. That, you know, Gindorf could have gone to Minnesota. Ellefson could have gone to Purdue. These are Big Ten tight ends. And Gindorf is maybe even a level above that. What I mean is just that the kid went to Crosby Ironton, which is in the middle of freaking nowhere, but tested like Rob Gronkowski. And is just an athletic marvel that played quarterback at his school just because he was the best athlete. And now that he's had 3 years to learn the tight end position, I think you might really be seeing something special at that spot. And then you've got Babich, who is your move tight end, you know, your big slot, your big flex, but at the same time is capable of blocking in the same way, you know, like a Jeff Ilias was when you played. Maybe not the guy that you ran out there on third and one, but still somebody that didn't embarrass himself. So they can do so much with two or three of these guys on the field. You can, you know, have technically a B13 personnel, but you can line up four wide, or you can line up in a traditional 12. It's just, I love it, man. It becomes, and it's something that Coach Entz said at the press conference today. These are the things that drove him nuts as an offensive coordinator. So he's having his offensive coordinator drive other people nuts. How excited should Bison fans be about this group of tight ends, especially considering after this year, there's still two more years of Babich and Gindorf?
Basically, I really can't think of a word to summarize it, but you have a group of guys that are very special. Now, does it become the two guys that were drafted in the first round in Iowa special? You know, probably not to that level, but it is the FCS version of that, in my opinion.
The Fant and Hockenson?
What's that?
Fant and Hockenson.
Yep. I can never remember which one was drafted first, but they were pretty close, weren't they?
TJ went like eighth to the Lions, and then Fant went 23rd to the Broncos or something like that.
Okay, a little more spread out than I thought. But, yeah, to me, this is kind of that version. just because you got guys that are so athletic and they're far much better than the competition that they're facing, and you can see it in spurts. I don't think you see it as consistently as you will in a year or two, or even by the end of this year. But when you look at that touchdown that Noah Gindorf had in the third quarter,
Man against boys.
You took the words right out of my mouth, and it's very evident. I even hate to bring it up, but you saw that with a guy that now plays with the Eagles. So we'll catch him some slack because he plays with number 11 now. But you really didn't see it from Goddard until he was a junior. And then obviously into a senior year, but I think you're seeing spurts of that already with these guys. I don't know. It's just fun and special, and it's very rare. So if you're not appreciating it now, I don't think you ever will.
Yeah, you wonder, you know, and there are a lot of guys like that on the roster, and there have been throughout the run, where I think, in my opinion, the only guy that really ever got the offense actually designed around him was John Crockett. Everybody else since the run, since 2010 started, were just kind of part of the machine. But I think for 1 year, and you can certainly see by his rushing totals, there was 1 year where they're like, all right, John's our best guy. And then but I wonder what an offense designed around like Noah Gindorf would look like next year. They won't do it. But if he got the kind of game plan that a Dallas Goedert got, what would the numbers look like? Because like you said, I mean, he was just a different athlete. He's on a different level from the kids trying to tackle him. And I think Babich has similar potential. But what a special group, and what an advantage for Roll, not only as a tight ends coach, but as the coordinator, to be able to move these guys around and have a mismatch kind of no matter where they are. And then you don't even mention Ben Ellison, who's probably going to be a first-team all-league tight end, who, coming off an injury, was absolutely burying kids in the dirt at the, you know, attached to the formation, running a number of different things. He just absolutely dominated in the run-blocking game, and we know what a threat he is in the red zone. The last kid I want to talk to you about offensively is kind of from your neck of the woods, or relatively close, and that's this true freshman tailback, Kobe Johnson, out of Georgia. What have you seen from him? We basically got coached to admit today that kid's not redshirting. What does it take to be a true freshman running back in the Missouri Valley?
You have to be extremely tough. And Kobe Johnson, all of 177 pounds of him, and he looks like he's 165. It's not a knock on the kid, but he is very tough. He's very, very tough kid. He's fast, and it's usually going to take more than one guy to bring him down. And there's nothing more than you can ask from a running back. And the fact that he's a true freshman is exciting because he's only going to put on weight, and he's only going to get tougher. You know, he'll maintain probably most of his speed because he's got Jim Kramer training him up. Just being a true freshman, I don't care what level you're playing at, to be a true freshman running back is a very tough thing to do. I hope he gets more carries moving forward. I have a very strong hunch that he will. But I think that kid has an exciting future.
Coach Entz said that when Buddha went down to Georgia to scout Kobe, he watched him run a 10-500. And smart coaches find places for 10-500 kids to play. Were you running the 100 in 10-5?
I could not run it in 10-5. I'll put it that way. I ran a good 100, but I wasn't no 10-5.
I want to ask you about Dawson Weber and the safeties. Jimmy made a phenomenal break on the ball and kind of landed on his face mask. I think he played more, but my inclination is that diving pass breakup he made might have been the issue with his head, or what they tried to check out. But I feel uncomfortable even guessing to that degree, because it's a head injury. I don't think it's I don't think it's cool to kind of guess about that stuff anyway. But Dawson Weber comes in, and I thought really played his ass off for what you would expect from a sophomore, I believe. Dawson is, and really his first defensive, you know, game that mattered. I think he had some mop up duty maybe as a true freshman, but he had a pretty meteoric rise to the backup free safety spot, especially after Dom Davis blew out his knee again. This is not a kid that had a tremendous amount of playing time. And he comes in and in limited snaps ends up with the fourth most tackles on the team, ends up with five tackles, including a tackle for loss, and doesn't get beat deep. And that's obviously the primary function of a free safety. Tutsi was a freaking player of the game. I mean, Hendricks goes out, Tutsi completely takes the game over, picks two off, drops another pick, seven total tackles, ends up assisting on a tackle for loss. What did you think of the safety group? And they're both sophomores. I mean, is this the next generation of Dahl and Schomer and Duds and Heegs and Dempsey and Grimsley? I mean, could Tutsi and Weber be this? It seems like they always have the tandem.
So I know they were good, but let's not give Duds and Heegs too much credit, though.
Yeah.
I hope they hear this, too, because then I'll get a nice phone call from them. Yeah, I mean, it very well could be. I mean, I think we've got to see a little bit more. I really love the athleticism from Tutsi. That kid's all over the place. Seems like I don't even remember what the term is, but it's like the deal where you get done with a play and you press pause when the ball stops and you find out who's in the picture. I don't know if it's called like television something or other. I don't know.
The 25 is always correct. In the picture.
Someone please tweet at me and tell me exactly what it is and we'll figure it out. But that's the type of player he is. And those are the type of guys that were the Dahl and Schomers. We'll put an asterisk by Dudzik and Higgs, so on and so forth. But I feel like they could be. I want to see it more consistent. Obviously, Dawson Weber hasn't had a ton of opportunities to show that. He did his job, and kudos to him for stepping up in a moment where he didn't necessarily know if that would happen, but he was ready and he performed. So depending upon where James Hendricks falls, I mean, he needs to go through the proper protocols to make sure that he's okay. That's nothing to mess with. So obviously wish him nothing but the best health, and knowing that there's guys to add depth to the safeties, it's just next man up. Everybody says it, but you have to actually go and execute it. So we'll see as the season rolls on.
I love the length on Weber. That kid has at least 4 inches on my boy Duds. There's no question about that. He's 6'2", 193, and to fly around like that, that's range, man. That's range and that's length, and that's something that is kind of not very commonplace at the free safety position. So if he can continue to be where he needs to be, that kid's got all the potential in the world. One aspect that gave me a little bit of pause is the fact that we're now two games in, and I'm not seeing what I saw last year from the pass rush group. And granted, Greg Menard is gone, and frankly, you know, is one of the greatest pass rushers in the history of the program. But at the same time, he's one guy. And you've got a returning Derek Tuska, and in my opinion, two of the best interior rushers NDSU's ever had, and Spencer Wagey and Cole Karch. Spencer being kind of that J.J. Watt defensive tackle, defensive end, hybrid type of player. And then I think Karch was either a 9.5 or a 7.5 sack guy from the 3-tech spot a year ago. Yeah, the rest of the kids are young. The rest of the defensive ends are young. But those are three studs, man. And we're talking about one sack against UND. And I don't know how many were against Butler. I'll look it up real quick. But I don't remember, you know, I think there was one sack by Justice Kelly against Butler. So you're talking two sacks in two games against teams that were throwing the ball because they were behind. Do you think we just need to get Spencer Wagee healthy? Do the younger defensive ends need to step up because Derek's getting doubled constantly? What are you seeing from the pass rush or lack thereof? And again, we understand that, you know, the final score of these games is a combined 90-14. We get that we're nitpicking. We understand that, but it can't be that compelling to have us just list off why NDSU is so freaking awesome either.
I mean, okay, so if you look at the numbers and take it at face value, yeah, you want to get home more. There's no doubt about that. I don't think you get done with these two non-conference games and you look back and go, hey, if they had two sacks, would you be happy? Okay, the answer would be no. So you'd want to be more in the 6-7 range. Anything beyond that would be gravy. What they're doing schematically, I haven't really paid that close attention to it at this point to really know if that's causing or being a reason why they're not getting home. I don't know. I don't have a firm opinion at this point. I don't think it's too cause of concern. Like you said, it is kind of nitpicking. I don't know. I feel like these other games will be more telling because I don't think you're going to be unveiling all your secrets as a defense. I'll put it that way in these first two games.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I mean, my thing was you've got 59 dropbacks and two sacks. And that's a rate that I'm uncomfortable with. If you're going to go up against Jake Mayer in 2 weeks, who's a Walter Payton Award candidate, and you're going to play some quarterbacks in the Valley that can spin it as well, I'm not sure that the one in South Dakota State, you know, is that guy. I don't even know how healthy he's going to be, but there are other QBs in this league that can spin it. So I would like to see more consistent pressure, especially like I said. Sure, Logan is young, or Barty is young, or Tony Pierce is young, but Dak, whoever that is, A, is definitely getting singled because you've got Tuska, Karch, and Wagee to deal with. When you've got three rock solid studs, you just got to get home more. But like I said, this is nitpicking. I said something about Marquise Bridges, and I'd love to get your opinion on this because you had a chance to go in practice against Marcus Williams. I'm sure you went against Trey Dempsey when he was playing corner. Went against C.J. Smith, obviously. And what I said was this, that I felt like Marquise does a lot of things well, and it might be one of the more complete corners they've had at North Dakota State. Marcus was a ball hawk. He's like a 10-year pro in the league, but I felt like Marcus was maybe not the world's best tackler, and also he did give up some stuff when he was gambling. CJ almost never gave up anything, but also didn't create a ton of turnovers. He was just more of a lockdown pass breakup. You're not getting anything, but I'm also not going to pick this off and take it to the house. Marquise seems to have ball skills. He's an excellent blitzer. I found him to be a very good tackler. What's your opinion on Marquise? And maybe, I don't know, maybe you wouldn't have had a chance to go against him, I don't think.
No, he was getting recruited by Coach Austin as a receiver during my senior season. So last year it was 2014, and I actually do remember watching tape on him as a high school senior and getting asked by Coach Austin what my opinion on him was back then too. So kind of weird how things come full circle. I think the kid's extremely athletic. He's a very hard-nosed football player, and that's exactly what he is. He's a football player. Marcus Williams certainly was that too, but Marcus was probably more of an athlete. And I haven't had a chance to interact with Marquise much, but Marcus was very much a student of the game, and that's why he was such a ball hawk, because it was like he knew where things were going to be at all times. It was like he knew with certain formations and route combinations, whatever it is, he always knew where the ball was going to end up. And that's why he's got, I don't know how many school records and how many pick sixes and whatever it is. But Marquise, the way he breaks on the ball, the way he runs downhill, what I mean by that is when he's coming off his back pedal to come make a tackle or make a break on the ball, he does it at 1,000 miles per hour. And I feel like that's why he's been able to transition from offense to defense so well, is because he has that mindset. So definitely want to keep seeing that more from him, because anytime you have that on your defense, you can't go wrong.
Yeah, what a brilliant position switch. And just understanding that, you know, yeah, Marquise, would it be great to have a senior wide receiver leading the group? Yeah, it would. But they didn't screw this up. I mean, it's pretty clear to me they didn't screw this up. I think that the Bridges found a way to get on the field, and his time at wide receiver is something that he's admitted to me has really led to this all-conference, potentially all-American level corner. And it's something I think Bison fans should be really excited about, because lockdown corners don't grow on trees. And I think that's where Marquise is at. All right, Trev, man, I appreciate you, buddy. We're going to do a quick content preview. We've got Swanee coming at 9 a.m. tomorrow. I think he's going to – the last time I spoke, that this thing is going to be kind of about NDSU being better than advertised. Swanee's always very optimistic. We appreciate that about him. But this was a team that, you know, was maybe picked second in the country or third in the country. And Swan's not having that. Swan thinks this is the national champion, or the national, you know, number one contender, basically. So that's one thing to pay attention to. Then we've got Keith, who on Wednesday is obviously going to open up his show talking about whatever it is that he decides to cover. I think Keith's been fantastic, frankly. I don't know if you've had a chance to read his deal that he did on Zach Johnson, or what went on last week, but the stuff that he's been opening the show with on Wednesdays at 4 has really been awesome. The return of the Pro Bison recap, now that guys have made rosters, so we're going to break down some of the highlights, some of the film of the guys that had a chance to play. Obviously, Carson's film is going to be prominent in that, with him touching the ball on every snap for the Eagles. And then we're still going to have Trev's midweek thoughts. Folks, thank you so much. We're at about the 48-minute mark, so we really appreciate you guys hanging on this long with us. The number one way to support us, as always, is become a VIP subscriber to the Bison Report. VIP subscription is going to get you access to the VIP forums. It's going to get you access to all our recruiting information, upon film review, Trev's midweek takes. And it's going to be 30% off. That's what we're doing right now. We're doing 30% off of an annual VIP subscription. It is the number one way to make sure that we at Bison Report stay above water and are able to continue to make fantastic content for you guys. Thanks for listening. For those of you that are subscribers, thanks for doing that too. Go Bison.